Are you looking for Christ-centered, cross-focused Christmas gifts for your young children, grandchildren, or godchildren? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December is a children's book titled, O Holy Night. This children's resource costs less than $2, plus shipping and handling. O Holy Night is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. O Holy Night, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. Bet you can't guess who composed that piece. It's the Lord's Prayer. It's from a Mass composed by a Roman Catholic composer, a Mass to Hope. Dave Brubeck, he just shy of his 92nd birthday, passed away this week, and he's most remembered for his famous jazz works. But in fact, he had a strong religious life and great contributions to be made to sacred music in the latter part of his life. That might not be something you read about when you read the obituaries for Dave Brubeck. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Thursday afternoon, the 6th of December. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway joins us to talk about the sacred works of jazz musician Dave Brubeck and their coverage in the media. A little bit later, Pastor Heath Curtis will join us to talk about Ambrose of Milan. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest, a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here.
The story of the passing of David Brubeck is huge, no matter how you cut it. But there was a religion angle, in particular his religious faith and his sacred musical works later in his life. How was that covered, the latter part, in the obits?
Right. Well, Brubeck was such an important influence on so many people, and he was so popular among a wide variety of listeners, and obituaries had a lot of ground to cover. And what I thought was striking about it is some of these obituaries were so good, except that they kind of gave short shrift to his sacred work. He composed quite a few different sacred works, including a Mass. There were oratorios. He had been received into the Catholic Church decades ago, and he had written extensively, or he had spoken extensively about the importance of sharing God's love in music. His wife frequently wrote the lyrics to his sacred works. It's a really important aspect of his career, and in some cases it wasn't even mentioned. So the Washington Post had a great obit if you just wanted to get a good feel for him in a secular sense. But it didn't really talk too much about, it didn't talk really at all about his sacred works. I mean, it mentioned that he had written them, but it didn't mention anything about their importance or how they integrated with the rest of his life. And ditto on the New York Times. They mentioned that he frequently used religious themes to address social and political issues, but didn't really get into it. And the Associated Press obituary did a little bit better. But all in all, I mean, this is a really rich field of inquiry. And press that's more devoted to religious coverage in recent years has done a much better job with this than we saw in the obituaries that ran yesterday.
You mentioned the American Catholic piece. What was best about that one?
Oh, well, that one was great because he really speaks openly about his Catholicism in a way. You know, he's not just speaking in generic religious terms, and he talks about basically some almost mystical experiences he had in the composition process. He was received into the Catholic Church after he'd written this Mass, and he'd been asked to write it by this Catholic organization, and he had written a Mass, and he didn't have a section for the Our Father. And I think this is the piece where he talks about this. And someone suggested that he really add that into the Mass. And he said, no, I'm all done. And then he's like vacationing later, and it came to him in a dream. And he realized when all the music came to him in a dream, and he wrote it down as quickly as he could, and he had to accept that there was something larger going on in his creative process.
So the bottom line here is, if you're only covering his death and his passing as a chapter in American music, you're missing part of that chapter if all you talk about is Take Five.
Yeah. I mean, as important as that album was and is, that is just one part of a much longer and more interesting story. And even the obituaries seem to understand that he was a very interesting person. He was married to, I think, his high school sweetheart for, you know, his entire life, and they had six children who they raised together. I mean, it's a very non, usually when there's stories about talented musicians, it's like a parody of Behind the Music. You know, they're crazy episodes of drugs and family trauma and, you know, all sorts of nightmare scenarios. And that wasn't Dave Brubeck's situation. And part of the reason why has to deal with his religious faith. And so you're missing even just who he is as a man, apart from the music, if you don't get into the role that religion played in his life and in his marriage and in his relationship with his community and his family and all that.
Another story that you've talked about recently is, of course, everyone anticipates whether or not the Supreme Court is going to be hearing cases regarding marriage law. And this is what you write. I want to know what you mean. You said, "Newsrooms are not about shining light on anything that might cast doubt on whether marriage law should be changed to include same-sex couples." What are the newsrooms about when it comes to this subject?
Well, it's so interesting to me, this topic, and it's one that doesn't interest me personally, except insofar as I've been tracking media coverage of how we look at same-sex marriage or changing marriage law to include same-sex couples or other people or other groupings. And even the most honest liberal outlets will say that they aren't really doing journalism so much as advocacy on this topic. So you see just a lot of cheerleading. Partly it just makes for a good story if you can show people going to the marriage licensing bureau and picking up a marriage license when they couldn't do that before. The reporters are very easily able to see the human interest story in how changes in marriage law would affect same-sex couples or other people. They are really, really bad at seeing any other angle to the story. And part of that is because it's more abstract. Part of it is obviously because they have no interest in covering any other side of the story. But you will notice that there's just certain narratives that are adopted. There are so many examples that could be had at this. But take for example, the major ruling on same-sex marriage, which is Vaughn Walker's decision in California on Proposition 8. I mean, that ruling is amazing. I read it sometimes just for fun. In it, he talks a lot about how gender is unimportant, how children don't need mothers, how children don't need fathers, how it just completely doesn't matter if they have a mother or a father. All that matters is that they have two adults, you know, in the vicinity of the child rearing. It talks about how marriage based on gender complementarity is this like archaic construct that's no longer valuable. It talks about how pretty much most of the traditional religions in America are, I forget how he puts it. He says something about how they're like harmful to gays. And it's just an amazing document to read through. And yet, I don't think the media are that interested in exploring, like, let's say we accept these ideas. Let's say we accept the ideas that mothers are unimportant to child rearing or whatnot. Can you imagine, given that this is different than the way that all societies have done things over time, that maybe there's something interesting we could explore here? Or are there any people who disagree other than the same people we go to make the side that doesn't want to change marriage law look silly? I just don't see much creativity in the way we approach this story as journalists. It just seems like more cheerleading than an actual desire to unpack the issues, look at what the long-term implications would be for changing marriage law, what the consequences would be, whether those consequences are intended or not intended, looking at the norms we associate with marriage and how they would change if we decide with Vaughn Walker that gender is no longer an important component of marriage. you know, all of a sudden there are all sorts of norms that are associated with that that also are no longer probably as important. You know, fidelity as traditionally understood, or monogamy as traditionally understood. And, you know, there are some newspapers that have covered this, but it's just not getting a lot of the coverage that you would expect for such a major, important issue.
So with only about 30 seconds here, there's nothing really wrong with advocacy journalism as long as you're honest about it, but their advocacy is causing them to miss the bigger, many, many stories related to it.
Actually, I would say there is something wrong. I think it's better to be honest that you're doing advocacy journalism than to be dishonest about what you're doing. But I would say that it's actually very harmful for civil society to take an advocacy approach on such an important issue, such a foundational important issue to society as marriage. Because the media have decided that this is an issue where the only reason you could be opposed to it is because you're a bigot, they kind of treat the story as one where you dismiss opponents as bigoted. And so they miss out on all of the vibrant arguments being had among philosophers and political theorists and bioethicists and all those people who are kind of interested in the deeper debate that change in marriage law leads to. And so I think it's actually harmful to do advocacy journalism. It also is just not good to shut out an entire sector of society as being bigoted when they are making arguments against something for non-bigoted reasons.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C. She's a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, Pastor Heath Curtis will join us on this Thursday afternoon, December the 6th. Tomorrow, the church will be remembering Ambrose of Milan. He's a 4th century theologian, hymn writer, and bishop. His story is fascinating. The time in which he lived, equally fascinating. And he happens to occupy what I would call a crossroads in history. His path overlaps with another one of the great theologians of that time. It overlaps significantly with him. Augustine. We'll talk about Ambrose of Milan for the remainder of this hour, right after this. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina, St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota, St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio, First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas, Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri, Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois, Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama, and Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.